I'm Bay, and you're listening to Bay Baltimore, a weekly pop culture and society podcast recorded in a quiet neighborhood in Baltimore. This episode, I am excited to talk about a show that has just blown me away. And I can't wait to talk about it. So, and the show is called King Esther. Okay. So I fully planned on coming to you this episode and talking about an Amazon Prime show that I had binged over the last week or so. But I had tossed and turned, and when it came time to recording the show, I said, not finna do that. Nope, not gonna be able to. For a number of different reasons. So instead of talking about the whole show, like taking up the whole show, I'm gonna talk about the show that I intended to talk about, or at least I thought I was gonna talk about, right now. And then the rest of the show will be dedicated to King Esther. And just my connection to the time frame of the show and why I'm drawn to the show anyway. But for right now, so the show that I was gonna talk about was called The Feed. And you know, if you've listened to a few of these episodes over the last year and a half, even when I was on a different platform, if you'd listened to the show at all, I have always complained about Amazon and Netflix, but in this instance, Amazon and its aversion. I don't even know if it's an aversion. I just think they're not intentional about the people that they're working with, the directors that they're working with, showrunners, what have you. And then they're not intentional about taking them to task, about bringing in voices of color and people of color in the writing rooms and then behind the scenes, and then in front of the camera, right? And so we have a number of examples of that, even though, you know, the top of the year or earlier in the year, I talked about how I loved Fleabag, but I hated the fact that there weren't so many people of color in it. And you could have gotten there. There were a number of different ways you could have gotten there. I loved Undone because it was people of color focused, specifically Latinx focused. I loved Transparent, even though you could have given us more people of color. You had people of color, but you could have done more. You could have done better, and there's no reason for it. And also, I mean, come on, the lead character wasn't even a trans woman, so I really don't know what you're talking about, but whatever. Anyway, but I still enjoy the show. But you get what I'm saying? Like, I have this push and pull. And to be honest with you, I only started watching Amazon Prime for the same reason that everybody else who has Amazon Prime started watching it. And that's because it came free with my Prime subscription. Duh. I order a lot of things off Amazon like everybody else. I can get it in an hour, and I love that, even though I don't like Amazon's practices and how they treat their workers, but that's another story. Anyway, so I'm a Prime member, right? And so I get access to Amazon Prime. At one point, they had video picture streaming service, like, you know, where you could put up a bunch of photos and things like that. I really didn't look into it because I didn't care. And then they have music, Amazon Music, which I don't pay attention to that either because I don't care. I listen to Spotify or I buy things off Apple. But anyway, so I really just fell into it because Netflix did this weird thing where they stopped carrying shows and movies that from my childhood that I really loved, and I don't know why they did it. Like when they converted from you being able to remember a couple of years ago when they had that package where you could get a DVD and pay for your online service, so you could stream things and you could also order DVDs. Well, when they began to phase that out, I think they also phased out a lot of those Criterion movies that they used to have. Remember that category? You probably don't remember it, but me, because I love watching a whole bunch of different genres of films and classic films and things like that, I follow Criterion, and I like to watch a lot of Criterion film recommendations and things like that. And so Criterion classics. Anyway, when they phased that out, it seems as if they took a lot of my child, the movies and shows that I watched as a child, they took those too. Or they never offered them to begin with. So anyway, and Hulu didn't really have it like that, although Hulu has the Criterion series. It's just Hulu is Hulu. You know what I mean? Like, they got commercials, and I'm not paying for premium. Not for nobody's Hulu. Cut it out. Even though Hulu is owned by Netflix. But anyway, I'm still not paying for Hulu premium because I have Netflix. So anyway, Oh, no, it's owned by Spotify. Still not paying for premium Hulu. Anyway, but anyway, so Hulu really didn't have it for me, even though they have the Criterion series. I still couldn't watch all of the shows that I wanted to watch. So I'm like, okay, well, let me see about this Amazon. I heard that they have Amazon Prime, the movies and the streaming. So let me just check this out. And so I began to check it out, and I told you some episodes, or I've shared in some episodes earlier this year, that I cannot stand the recommendations that Amazon has for me, because it seems like they only recommend like hood shows for me, hood movies. And don't get me wrong, I enjoy a good hood movie, but when I am watching films that are people of color, the centric, it's because y'all don't have it. Y'all don't have nothing else. And so when, I guess you're proving my point, when you are recommending me all of the same type of film, looks like that's all you got for Black people. Looks like that's all you have for offerings of Black actors and films that are focused on Black actors. Which is sad, because I'm like, I like Soul, you know, I don't like Soul Plane, but I like those, I like Black, predominantly Black cast, the comedies. And some of the dramas, although some of them, Love and Basketball, ugh, gross. Ooh, there's another one that I cannot stand, but I love Issa Brown Sugar. Ooh, I'll watch that every day. Anyway, so there are some that I love, even though they're pandering, and then there are some I love them anyway because they mean something to me in my youth, and they were a slice of time that I just always enjoy thinking about, and they had actors in there that were having fun and had good chemistry on screen. And then there were some that I'm just like, ah, this is a whack movie, but I'll enjoy watching it. Don't Drink Your Juice in South Central. Don't Be a Menace in South Central while you're drinking your juice in the hood is one of those. It's a terrible movie, but I love it because it's funny and it's a piece of my childhood. Anyway, Amazon Prime is not my go-to place for new and original programming. It just isn't. Like, I know for the past couple of years, they've been winning things with, what is it, Marvelous Mrs. Maisel? I don't watch that show, so I don't know. And some other things on there. But again, I have an aversion to predominantly white cast films and shows, so I'm typically not going to watch it unless there's some sort of compelling story behind it, like The Irishman, because I'm fascinated with Jimmy Hoffa and his disappearance and things like that. So, and unions and all of that. So, of course, I watched The Irishman. And plus, I like Joe Pesci because he's awesome. Anyway, or at least an awesome actor. I don't know what he's like as a person, but as an actor, I enjoy watching him on film. And Robert De Niro, come on. Anyway, and Al Pacino. Anyway, so I don't really go to Amazon Prime like that for like quality TV, quality films. So I take it with a grain of salt. But again, when you're talking about a subject matter that piques my interest, I'll give you a shot. And I might even hate watch it. And so in the case of the feed, I think I hate watched the entire season. I hate watched it because the premise is divine. It is essentially taking our fascination with social media and how it has permeated our entire global society, right? It's in every corner of the world, almost every corner of the world, even remote places. Social media is there somehow, right? And so it's taking that truth and it's turning it on its head. So instead of necessarily it just being online, you can get this chip implanted, and then you are physically a part of the network. So you're physically in the real world, but then you can also instantly, with however you can activate the chip or whatever, you become a part of the network, which is the feed, right? And everybody's bought into it. The show itself is a British-based show, and all the actors are British. I don't know if everybody's from London, but it's set in London, or at least, it's set in London, but I don't know if everybody's from London. But anyway, it's a UK-based show. And it's really interesting. It's got a lot of Black women in it, a lot of Black women of different shades and different hair textures, which I love. Got a Black woman in there who is a lead, who is clearly British, and they gave her an American accent. I don't know why they did that, because, honey, you just, you know, that maybe they didn't give her enough time to work on the accent, but it does not hold long. And I don't even know why she needed to have an American accent. It was dumb. Her sister's accent was better than hers, and I know she wasn't from the United States either. Anyway, so there are those concerns. But I think just generally speaking, I think the writing wasn't good. Not in, in places. It just wasn't. It wasn't good. Concept was there. You had, oh, what's the woman's name? Catherine Stark. Ooh, that's terrible. The woman who played Catherine Stark. Everybody knows her face. Everybody knows. Come on, you know who I'm talking about. That actress, it has a role, a heavy duty role here in the show. Enjoyed seeing her in something different. Yeah, but then still, I hated the writing. And so some of the scenes, some of the situations that she found herself in throughout the show were just, ugh. Anyway, and yeah, it was just bad writing in spaces. And as an unrealistic show goes, there were some, like, I was with them until they started going into this direction that just seemed like it just didn't work for me. So obviously the pitfalls that you would imagine would be in a society that would come about when a society, a world totally is dependent on this social media, this feed, right? So think about it this way. So remember a couple of weeks ago when Instagram decided that they were going to remove the like feature or the little heart button from some high profile accounts, because in their rationale, they said that they were, they knew that a lot of high profile accounts were getting money. They were monetizing their, posts. And so this was a way for them to, you know, kind of even the score. They were getting money off of their platform, but not paying Instagram themselves. So they were like, you know what? Some of you, I'm gonna remove the like feature from y'all because y'all not kicking us any money back. And of course, the high profile media influencers were in an uproar. And I went and looked at my little old Instagram pages and said, oh, well, the likes buttons are still, the like feature is still there on mine. And it's because I'm not making any money from either one of my pages, my personal or Babe Baltimore page. So you gonna have the like button on mine. You know what I mean? That little heart's still gonna be on there. And it's on most all of my friends' pages too, because we're not making money from our pages. We're literally just sharing content and interacting with each other, right? Microblogging, right? And so we were straight. And I literally thought when these higher profile influencers were talking about it, I thought it was everybody. And then I look at my page and I'm like, nah, that's just y'all, baby. So anyway, so I get it. It's business. It's just business. Find you another way to make you some money. And if I'm a business, if I'm Instagram, I would have done it too. Because again, I know y'all making loot off my page. I know y'all making loot off my platform. I don't know that I would have demonetized them permanently. What I would have done if I was Instagram was to say, I'm going to remove this feature. And what you're going to need to do is pay me to get it back. Okay. It's just the cost of doing business. I don't know why they didn't do that. It seemed to me that you could, there's a way that you could manage that, but whatever. I, what do I know? Anyway, but a lot of people spend a lot. My point with that was you saw how a lot of high profile influencers were up in arms about that, removing that function, because it was messing with their money. Okay. So just now turn that on its head and now put social media, put it in a chip and have that chip embedded in that person's head. Not only can you be online more and selling more product through your social media tweets, but social media posts, but you can live stream from your head and you could like spontaneously just like do whatever. You can have your own reality TV show, but you're the person that's putting it out, right? And so, yeah, so take that and see. So again, look back at how influencers on Instagram were up in arms because that little function was there and reminded you that, oh, a lot of these people on here are doing a business on Instagram. This is how they make their money, right? So it's not such a stretch to assume that if we were then able to put a chip in our heads that would allow us to stream 24/7. And I guess the only time it would be turned off is when we were asleep. you can imagine that a lot of people would jump on that function, right? Or that feature, right? So it explores the very high highs about being an influencer and being in, you know, being top of the world on, well, what you would do to get more likes, to get more views in that reality, you know, in this feed that everybody's subscribing to. And then it also talks about some of the kind of pitfalls of being a part of that too. And so, you know, you can become addicted, and those, you know, coming off of the system can have real withdrawal, you know, you can have some serious withdrawal symptoms and all of that. But for all of that, all of those interesting concepts, it wasn't good. The acting was terrible in spots, and the writing, in spots it was the acting, and in other spots it was the writing that was just terrible. And so I finished watching it only because I like to start what I finish, but I didn't finish it because it was good. I just needed to see the end. So there was even a point where you had Black women lead characters who were doing some dumb, they were just in some dumb situations that it feels like didn't feel real. Do you know, oh, how can I explain it? If these were really Black women in power, I know they wouldn't, it feels like they wouldn't have come to this conclusion, which makes me think, who in the hell was in the writing room? Because did you have a Black woman in the writing room? Did you have a Black British woman in the writing room? A Black American? Like, who? Did you have a Black woman in the room? And I'm thinking the answer is no. And if you did, maybe you didn't listen to her, because the way that these women were talking, like, I'm not talking about the dialect. I'm not talking about the slang or whatever. I'm literally talking about how they were moving and navigating in some of these high pressure situations. Didn't feel authentic to me. I'm sure you had women in the writer's room. I'm sure they had women in the writer's room, but I don't think they had Black women in the writer's room. So anyway, and I think that it just read false to me, this, the way they reacted. To be honest with you, being 100% honest, it felt like they had Black women in a role that they had originally written for Black or for white men, and still had these Black actresses, or these Black actors be Black women in this series and be, play those roles, but still put them in situations and resolve those situations the way that they would, that a white man would, is the best way I can describe it. Like, it just didn't seem authentic. And I know that sounds far-fetched, but I mean, again, it's like, what's the difference between a male CEO and a woman CEO? What's the difference? The difference is, depending on their life experience. So two men can have different life experiences and still kind of, they would still come to a conclusion that is probably similar because of the, especially if they were white, because of their lived experience, right? But if you put a white woman in a room and a white man in the room, that perhaps that they wouldn't come to the same conclusion because of the way that they navigate in the world, right? Perhaps there is a school of thought that says, well, white men and white women aren't, you know, they would probably come to the same conclusion. But again, go with me. Just walk with me for a second. Your life experience as a woman having to navigate, just only talking about white people for a second. A white woman has to, in specific situations, especially in the corporate world, navigate the world differently, right? Than a white man. There are certain privileges that are allowed to a white man that a white woman, even in her whiteness and even in her privilege, she's not afforded because she is not a man, right? In our capitalistic, patriarchal capitalistic society, right? And so now replace the white man with a black man, and replace the white woman with a Black woman. Again, they might have navigated the world with experiencing the same oppression because they were both Black, but that does not mean that they would still come to the same conclusions because of the different lived experience of the Black woman being not only Black but also being a woman. Do you know what I mean? Like, they're different, right? So to assume that you can write this character and have a Black woman of color in it, but it was originally for someone else, maybe a white man, which, let's be real, a lot of these shows kind of are. Or maybe it was for a woman or a black woman, but it was written by someone who does not have that black woman's perspective, has not engaged with any black women who are in power. Do you know what I mean? No one in the room, they have nothing to go on except their imagination, right? And so in this scenario, I went all the way around the world and back again, but it just felt like, it almost felt like they had black women in a role that was originally meant for a white man, and they never really changed up the script, and they never really thought about how these black women would actually navigate in that situation. And I probably should have just said that instead of giving you that dumb scenario, but we're here now. Anyway, so yeah. And so there was that. So it just spiraled out of control in that scenario. Again, they have these two black women who are in charge. One of them has an American accent, which I believe, I don't even know if she is U.S. born, but, or not U.S. born, but like has spent any significant time in the United States. But I believe her accent a heck of a lot better than the main character, whose name I've forgotten. That black woman, like, I don't believe her accent. I believe her to be from the UK, and they should have just given her that. Anyway, so yeah, the show isn't good. It is 6 out of 10 stars on IMDb, and I think it's 50% on Rotten Tomatoes. So I'm not the only one who thinks that this show isn't great, but don't take my word for it. Don't take any of these critic scoring's word for it, because again, you should probably take all of that with a grain of salt, even my own opinion with a grain of salt. Watch it for yourself. There is more diversity in the show. There are more black women in the show, but it isn't good. Anyway, but what is good is this show, King Esther. And it is on, it's an Issa Rae produced show. It is on her YouTube channel. And it is, you know, so she's presenting it. So I imagine she has some money in this thing, but the Color Collective actually produced it. And the person who is the showrunner for it is Dewey Gerard. That's his name, Dewey Gerard. I think he's from New Orleans, which is significant because King Esther is set in New Orleans in a very specific time frame, and stars or at least focuses on a very particular person, and their story is unique and important, especially in this day and age. So when I after the break, I'm going to come back and talk all about King Esther. All right, so let me get into King Esther. Okay, again, so it is presented by the Color Collective and created by Dewey Gerard. And it's, you can literally look it up online by its name, kingesther.com. You can also find each episode, there are only 8. And each episode is 10 minutes in length. You can find those on Issa Rae's channel. On YouTube. And so anyway, so it's called King Esther, and here's the synopsis. So this is the story of Esther, a trans woman struggling to find her path in New Orleans during the week before Hurricane Katrina. In the face of an evacuation order, she is forced to make a choice that will impact her future forever. Will she get out on time? And like I said, so it's created, written, and directed by Dewey Gerard, who has some accolades and some experience on BET, at BET.com for sure. And it's a short film that is scripted. And it explores the intersection of race, class, and gender, and uniquely NOLA context. I'm reading, my bad. And the thing that drew me when I heard about this show from Queen talk about the show on her show, Queen with T&J, was that she said that Black Aunt Viv was in it. And for many of you guys who don't know, Black Aunt Viv there were two Aunt Vivs on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. We wrongly, and this is terrible to say, but the first Aunt Viv was brown skin, very funny, and had a lot of cute lines in there, and she was no nonsense and all of that stuff. And then something happened between the actress and Will Smith, whose show it was. Anyway, and so they fell out and then she left the show or got booted off the show. I can't call which. Anyway, so when she left, they replaced her with another Aunt Viv who was visibly many shades lighter. And who the actress, she was great, you know, but like she wasn't the original Aunt Viv. But she was described to, Queen described her as Black Aunt Viv, that they have Black Aunt Viv in this show. And so the actress that played, or the actor that played, quote unquote, the original Aunt Viv, because I won't say Black Aunt Viv, because they were both Black women. It's just one was brown skin, very brown skin, rich chocolate. And the other was very light skin, a light in complexion. But the one I'm talking about, the one that everybody says was the best Aunt Viv on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air was Janet Hubert. And so Janet Hubert is on this show as the mother of Esther. And Angelica Ross is in it too. Now, I only found out about that after I saved the show. Like, I was listening to Queen with TNJ, and I bookmarked the show while I was listening to it. And when I bookmarked it on YouTube, I saw that Angelica Ross was supposed to be in it. So I was like, oh, okay, bet. Angelica Ross, you know Angelica from Pose and her story, but most people know her from Pose. Famous trans actress. And introducing Rowan Amone, I think it's Amone, Amone as Esther. And Esther, again, is the title character of this show, right? Okay, so the reason why I was drawn to this is not only because I want to learn, I want to see more stories about Black trans people, not just because it's on my mind because of all of the tragic and senseless, untimely deaths and murders of Black trans women across the country, mostly at the hands of, I won't say what I was about to say, but they're gone and they shouldn't be. And there's a reason, there are several reasons, and we as a community need to talk about them, need to honor them, need to educate our people better. Across the country, and it's not just Black folks. It's a part of the Black community, and it's definitely a conversation and changes that we need to have in the Black community. But what we know is that as a global society, we need to do better, especially in Western societies, about how we treat our trans family. Anyway, so it's not just that. Why I'm just not craving. It's not just because I'm craving stories about trans people, right? And wanting to hear more and wanting to see more. It's the other piece is my connection to New Orleans right before Katrina. And I don't know if you know what you were doing, but I was in college. I had just come back to college. Moving, you know, it was well past move-in day, and I was getting back together with my friends at that point. I was well acclimated into college life. And so it was like I would go home for summer break, but I couldn't wait to get back to school because that was my real life. You know what I mean? That was where I could be who I was growing in, the person I was growing into being. Anyway, which is completely different than who I am today, but that should be all of us, right? Anyway, so I'm back at school. And the school that I went to, I think I've shared it before, but anyway, the school I went to, there were pipelines to get Black people and people of color, international students, to this university. And so the Black folk that I hung out with were from everywhere. So we had folk from Nigeria, but whose people were from Louisiana, because that's how that goes sometimes. And then, of course, we had just regular Black folk who been here, their family. But they were from Chicago and Kansas City and Texas and you know what I mean? Houston, I think it was mostly Houston. Anyway, so a lot of Black folk and D.C. and all of that stuff. So but we definitely had a lot of people from Louisiana, specifically in and around Baton Rouge, in and around New Orleans, and just generally Louisiana in particular. Or just in general. So anyway, so we were coming back like we did, and we were hanging in our crew like we did. And, you know, whoop, 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 we're in school maybe maybe a week. And then the week of Katrina hits. So we're talking August 22nd, 23rd, 24th. It was that was when it was clear that this thing was about to happen, right? And I had some people that I was close with at the time who were from Baton Rouge. And one person who I was cool with, he had the coolest name. Coolest. It was Cajun and it was cool. I wish I could say his name because you would think it would be cool too. Anyway, but this particular person, I was cool with him just because we hung out around with the same people. But anyway, his people were from New Orleans and they weren't from the Ninth Ward, but they were close to it. Anyway, so it was becoming clear that this thing was going to happen. And I can remember that. So Katrina, I believe, hit on a Monday. And I can remember the Monday prior to that. So whatever, maybe it was the 23rd, I can't call it. But the Monday before Hurricane Katrina hit, I can remember having whole conversations with people who were from the New Orleans area saying, oh, they've been threatening this for years. They've been ever since Hurricane Andrew, they've been threatening that the city was going to go underwater because the levees weren't strong and all of that stuff. They've been threatening that for years. And ain't nothing happened since Andrew. We good, right? That was the talk on Monday. Tuesday, the weather service is like, we not tripping now. This thing is about to go down. And so, you know, people are a little bit scared. They're calling their people, talking about, okay, what you finna do? What you finna do? And, you know, the conversation's being had. Oh, well, some of my people, we just gonna stay. Some of my people, oh, we finna get out. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday comes along. People who had decided to stay no longer could leave. Who decided to stay but wanted to leave could no longer. And I can remember everybody and their mother. Well, I'll go to this in a second. Anyway, so people had changed their mind and they were like, you know what? It's getting bad. The rain is come, but it's like getting bad now. So I want to go, but they couldn't because water, you know, roadways were being blocked and all of that stuff. And it was difficult to get out. All right. Saturday, Sunday, it's tight. We're all tight. We on pins and needles praying that the hurricane, we know it's going to be huge. We're hoping that the minute it hits landfall, that it just dissipates. Now, that's naive of us because that's not how the weather works. That's not how strong weather systems works. But that's what we were thinking. What you need to know is right before Hurricane Katrina hit, maybe Sunday night, everybody who was from Louisiana, that general Louisiana area, specifically southern Louisiana. So think New Orleans and Baton Rouge. Look it up on a map. Baton Rouge ain't far from New Orleans. Anyway, anybody who had a New Orleans Baton Rouge number, even though they were in, you know how phone systems work, even though we were up at school, which was clear across, it was way up north from Louisiana, their phone stopped working. And I can remember trying to call my homegirl, who I was real close to at the time, and I can remember getting a busy signal. I'm like, why is her phone not working? And then our silly selves were like, oh, you got a New Orleans number, you got a Louisiana, South Louisiana number, your phone ain't gonna be working because the power lines are down. Girl, that was the trip of the centuries. And then it clicked. If I can't get a hold to you, you can't get a hold to your people. So for, what was it, the better part of a week? The better part of it. I would say if Katrina hit on Monday, and I believe it did hit on a Monday, Katrina hit on Monday, they didn't get a hold to their people until like Friday, Saturday. That's a long time. Now, mind you, when you go off to college, you already know you're not calling mom and dad like that. You're not calling your people like that unless you had a relation. You know, you're just not. That's not what you do typically, right? Even me, who I speak to my people, I speak to my parents every day because that's the relationship we've always had. But even in college, like, well, I'll take that back. I will call them once a week in college. I've since, we talk every day because life is short. And even if it's just like a little 5 minute, hey, what's up? I call my daddy or I text mama, or they'll call me or mama will text me right quick. And we'll just say a little something, just that connection, right? But like when I was in college, it was like maybe once a week. because it was like, I got my life out here and they didn't want to crowd me and I was too busy trying to live. Anyway, so it was not unheard of for us not to hear from our people for a week, but that was by choice. This wasn't. So can you imagine wanting to talk to your people and can't? For a week, you don't hear nothing from your people. Not a letter. Can't get no letter out. Can't get nothing out because none of the services are working. We all know the story of what happened, right? We all know what it was like after the hurricane, because after the hurricane came the flooding, right? So it was like not after the hurricane, but like during it, the levees broke and there was nowhere for the water to go but into the city, right? And so all of these, everybody knows the story, right? I won't rehash that. But like the devastation was total in many places. And, you know, I can remember going to New Orleans with, because, you know, my people are from Louisiana and I got a brother that has moved down to Louisiana. And then I got another brother who has his law firm is not far from New Orleans. Well, sorry, I have people in Louisiana. I have a brother who is now lives in New Orleans, but I have another brother whose business practice is like just outside of New Orleans. Anyway, so I went back. I went there. So Hurricane Katrina hit in 2005. I went there 2010, something like that. So 5 years later, 5-6 years later, and I could still see the houses that had the little X's on them to say nobody. The little graffiti that the emergency people put on the houses, the first responders put on the houses to indicate if there was someone who was left in there, who was trapped, how many people were in there, if they were alive or if they weren't, right? So even 5 years later, 5-6 years later, those houses were still there. And when we went for Thanksgiving last year, I don't think we made it to we did make it out of the quarter and we did make it around. Some of those houses are still up there. And I think at this point, you know how vacant houses go. They're just there and nobody's really touched them, but you can still see some of the graffiti from the emergency workers, right? But anyway, in some neighborhoods, including the 5th Ward or 9th Ward, everybody knows, it was total. The devastation was total. Anyway, I'm getting back to King Esther in a minute, I promise. But the reason why it's just resonated with me is because I can remember King Esther is literally set. It starts Monday and it ends on Saturday. And oh, okay. So that's what it was. So Hurricane Katrina hit on Saturday and it hit on Sunday and the devastation was like realized on Monday. Like it was finishing on Monday. But for some reason, I remember, I just thought it hit on Monday, but it hit like Sunday. It must've hit Sunday night. Anyway, so King Esther starts on the Monday prior to Hurricane Katrina and it finishes Saturday night. And so there is a moment in King Esther where everybody, I think it's episode five or six, where Gerard is, each episode he comes and he says a little bit of something to introduce the episode. And then we get into the episode, right? And so he said, I wrote this because I wanted to show you. You know, I had to decide whether or not to stay or leave during Katrina. And I wanted to show that in this episode. And so, you know, we've got people, these episodes are so short, but in the short time, they're less than 10 minutes long. But in that short time, they translate a lot of information and there's a lot of emotion. And there's a lot that these little short little episodes share. And this particular episode, I believe it was episode 5. That was the decision episode where the main character, Esther, is deciding on whether or not she's going to stay or go. Stay in New Orleans and fight this, you know, hang around in Katrina or go, right? And so it resonated with me on one level because I knew that this was going to happen. I knew that there was that if you can't talk about the days leading up to Hurricane Katrina and not talking about the trepidation that people faced trying to decide whether or not to stay or go. And I can remember the conversations back where I was way up north in college, going around and going to the grocery store or whatever. And I overheard people saying after the devastation, you know, those people were warned to leave. Why didn't they leave? And I'm like, I grew up in the Midwest, so I could tell, and Tornado Alley. And so where I went to school was not Tornado Alley. It was Midwest, but not Tornado Alley. Google Tornado Alley to understand what I'm talking about. Anyway, so there was always a threat of danger, always a threat of a natural disaster. And when you are under constant threat, any fool can tell you, if you're under a constant threat from anything, as an outside observer, you can recognize that there's just a place where you get where you're just kind of numb to it, and you expect, you know what to do. You know how to move, and you just, or you know how to respond to tragedy, right? You just kind of put one foot in front of the other, and it's not the best response, but you have developed a response, right? It's a mechanism to kind of guard yourself, right? So I'm thinking, you know, these people are like, you know, they were told to leave and all that stuff. And I can remember thinking, you know, it's clear that none of these people ever grew up with a threat of natural disasters always hanging over your head. Because let me tell you something. Where I grew up, tornadoes were a constant threat during the summer. Even to this day, tornadoes are a constant threat in the Midwest, depending on where you are. You got a whole industry of people who are called storm chasers for the point of trying to catch a tornado. All they do is run up and down some of these main highways trying to chase weather storms, weather systems for the purpose of catching a tornado. And if you are in and around the Kansas City, Missouri, Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas area, you're going to find, during tornado season, you're going to find yourself a tornado, right? And so if you live in any of those areas, you're always hearing the siren during the summer, always between June, late June, early July through August, the end of August, early September, you're always hearing the siren at least once or twice. The skies are always darkening. And sometimes there are a ton of false alarms. Sometimes the tornado touches down, but nowhere near where you live. You know what I mean? And so there's a level of comfortability that you get. Because how many false alarms are you going to hear before you finally, like, how many times are you going to jump? If you keep hearing a buzzer ring, there's a certain point where you're just not going to jump the next time you hear it, right? After so many times. So I can appreciate, there are two levels why I can appreciate why people did not leave and why a ton of people don't understand. And I'm sure you can kind of deduce this by now. Number one, there was always a threat. And like I told you, some of my friends were like, they've been talking about big hurricanes destroying New Orleans for years, since Hurricane Andrew. It's cool. We, you know, it might not even happen. So I appreciate why they said that. But then the other reason, you know, and why they wouldn't leave is because, you know, they survived Andrew. They're going to be all right. Right. The other piece is I don't have nowhere to go. I don't have any resources to get me out. I'm going to just ride this out. I'm going to do the best I can where I'm at because I don't have anything else. And that was another thing that just frustrated me, because I was just like, you don't know what it is to be poor and not have resources to get yourself out of a bad situation. And so you have to make do. You ever talk to a poor person in the country? Of course they want to get out and they want to have a bigger home and shoot, the same thing for a poor person in the city. They, of course they want to go somewhere else. Of course they want to experience something else, but this is what they have. So they're gonna make do with what they have. And you mean to tell me that you wouldn't find it hard to leave something that you put a lot of time and energy into, a lot of money, what little money you have, you wouldn't find it hard to leave there? Or better yet, you have a family member who is immobile, hard to move them. You know what I mean? Without any money, without the resources to move them. I'm not leaving my people. So we just gonna be here, right? So that resonated with me, right? But then the other piece is, specifically about this episode, and again, I might be wrong. I might be wrong about which episode is the one over her decision to leave, to stay or go. But there's a point where she is in a hotel room with her good girlfriend who is also a trans woman, and she's has body modifications. So she's, you know, she looks good. Her body is banging, and she is in the sex industry. She's a sex worker. And it's clear that, you know, with the dynamics with, Queen Esther's mom and her sister, and even her brother, you know, they don't want Esther to be, a sex worker. excuse me, but they're not shaming her. But anyway, what we know is that there's moments where Esther is engaged in the sex work. And so I'll talk about that in a second. But anyway, so she's in the stay or go episode. She is in this hotel room with one of her good girlfriends, Petra, who is, she's a success. It seems as if she's pretty successful. But that she is leaving. She has decided to leave, her and her friends. They've got this car and they're finna go to somewhere. I can't even remember where they were going. I think folks were going over to North Texas. So Houston, the Houston area, because that was supposed to be an area that was going to be safe, during Katrina. And so there was a point where, Petra says, I have my friend who I'm riding with has a seat in the car. Are you ready to come? And Esther's like, no, I'm good. Where am I going? Where are we going? Patrick's like, does it matter where we're going? And she's like, no. And Esther's like, no, I'm not going to go. And then there's a moment, I think there's like one or two more lines. And then there's a moment where Patrick looks her, Esther dead in her face. And she says, you know, you don't need a hurricane as an excuse to leave New Orleans. And in that statement was so much, because up until this point, what we know is that Patrick doesn't want to be, she doesn't want to have to rely on sex worker. At least that's what it's implied. If she wants to do sex work, I'm sure that's her thing. But like, she's doing this because she needs to. And Esther was doing it at some points with her because she needed to. She had no other source of employment. What we know is that Esther is an aspiring actress, but she's not getting the play that she needs. She's just not getting it because the casting directors, particularly this one black woman, she's hating on her, basically, for a lot of number of different reasons, not giving her a break or anything like that. I believe, we're led to believe that it's because Esther is trans and the woman is hating on her because she's trans. No, we're not led to believe. She out and out says it in a certain point, which just gut, it was a gut check, but Esther had something for her. But anyway, it was still a sad scene for that woman to tear this other woman down like that. Anyway, or another woman down like that. So anyway, in that moment where Petra says, you know, you don't need a hurricane as a reason not to leave New Orleans. What we know in that moment is that Esther's been beaten up, verbally abused by members of her family, verbally abused by the world. She definitely had a bad relationship with her brother. And there was a point where, you know, maybe there's some reconciliation happening, but maybe not, because maybe it's too little too late, or maybe there's a whole lot more than sorry. Sorry just ain't gonna cut it. So that's their whole dynamic. And so we're reminded of her dynamic with some of her family members, her brother and sister, specifically her brother. We're reminded of the way that she's treated out in the world, that people aren't looking at her in the eye for who she is, and that people aren't respecting her or giving her respect because she thinks she doesn't, her body ain't right yet. So like, she's, I guess you would say she's pre-op. For those who would subscribe to getting surgeries to feminize, quote unquote, feminize their bodies. And Queen, Marsha's Plate, specifically, Diamond from Marsha's Plate, she talks about some of the surgeries that she went through when she was under the pressure to look, quote unquote, like a woman, when she was growing up, and talking about all of that. So you should definitely listen to, Marsha's Plate, because it's trans people, all trans people who are on that show, who are co-hosts for that show. But it's really led by, it's not led by Diamond. It's maybe it was a brainchild of Diamond, but like, she has a lot of great stories that she shares. And so she talks about surgeries and feminization and all of that stuff, and how she felt the pressure to have her body look a certain way from her own world, from other trans people, trans women in particular. And so anyway, so there's a point where Esther's like, oh, you know, people look at me a certain way. They don't really respect me. They don't really look at me in my face because, you know, my body isn't right. My body isn't together. I'm not womanly looking enough. Anyway, so she's been just rained on by society, right? And, you know, she's engaging with these men who treat her, who clearly have fetishes and are treating her like a thing instead of a person. And there's one point where she is abused to the point where she needs to go to Petra before the leave or go scene. There's a point where she goes to Petra to be healed from this encounter with this John, who is just, ew. Like, why would you do that to a person? I don't understand that. But anyway, so again, it's just in that line, we know that Petra is right. Like, go somewhere else. Is that somewhere else going to be better than where you are? Maybe, maybe not, but it's a chance to start over. It's a chance to start fresh. You want to be an actress. Go pursue your dream somewhere else, because maybe this ain't hitting it for you. Maybe this ain't it for you, and maybe this is the time for you to escape. But she doesn't take Petra up on her offer. And so, you know, we switch to another scene, another episode where, you know, it's getting closer. Katrina's getting closer. And, oh, before that, before Katrina's getting closer, but she goes on this date with this person, and I think I might have missed it, but I think his name is King, and her brother's name is something else. King. His name is King, and you get the sense that how the actor portrayed him, you can get the sense that he's struggling with his sexuality, or at least he's struggling with his attraction to Esther and trying to get over it. And you want so badly for him not to be a dirtball to Esther, and he's not a dirtbag. He's just trying to get over his thing. He's just trying to get over himself. Do you know what I mean? Trying to get over what society is trying to shame him. Like, it's clear that he has an affection for Esther, and he has had an affection for Esther because they've known each other since they were kids. And so there's a point where they have a date, and it's cute and it's sweet. And of course they make love. And then it's like, they have this moment of sweetness, and then here comes Hurricane Katrina. And it's just like the world is about to be torn upside down. Could it be a fluke? Perhaps. You know what I mean? Could it be another false alarm like it has been so many years in the past? Probably. But folks are really moving. Folks are getting some gone because they think maybe not. And so Esther turns down Petra's offer to get out of Dodge. But then here comes King. So King comes. The last episode, King comes. And he's like, come on, you want to go to New York, right? And and Esther's like, of course Esther goes with King, because duh, you know, that's, she gets in the car with King. But then something happens, and you need to watch it to find out what happens in that interaction. But it has nothing to do with King treating her a certain way. It's just something happens. There's an interaction that happens that kind of throws things into topsy-turvy. But so yeah, it's just, it's not written. Gerard is not trans. He's not. I don't even know if he's queer. But this was his baby. This was his creation. And Angelica Ross is on the... She's all a part of it. She's an executive producer. She's all up in it. So I don't doubt that the reason why there was such care taken to Esther, even when telling the tragedies of her story or the tragic pieces of her story, I think there was such care taken for Esther and her story, is because Angelica was on the team, right? And I don't know if there were other trans people in that room. When you go to the kingesther.com website, you see everybody who's included in front of the camera and behind it. And I don't know if there are other trans folk that are behind the scenes and in the writer's room, but I just know Angelica Ross is there, and Angelica Ross can be trusted to make sure that the story is told and told well. So I know I enjoyed King Esther. I know it's short, and certainly there are a few things left to be desired. Like, I would have loved to know more about the story between the entire family, Esther's whole family, Ruth. There's something going on with Ruth where she's with one man, but she wants to be with someone else. There's definitely something going on with her brother, who her brother has a biblical name. Hold on. Let me pull it up right quick. My bad. King is her brother. King is her brother. Damien is the man that she goes out on a date with and is in love with. So, but put that to aside. So I would love to explore her relationship, Esther's relationship with Mignon, who is her mother, who is played by Janet Hubert, the first Aunt Viv, and Esther's relationship with Ruth, because clearly there's some tension there, but it's not necessarily about Esther being trans. It's about just sibling. There's a sibling rivalry there. And Ruth has a relationship. Like, it's clear that she has a relationship with this guy named Elroy, but like she's with someone else. And I want to hear more about that. But I mean, there's only but so much you can put in 10 minutes, right? But yeah, I want to know more. I want to know more about these characters. And I hope there is a second season. I pray that there's a second season because I do want to know more. Because yeah, King has a whole church. He starts a whole church and this hip hop mixtape. And he gets his whole, he puts out this hip hop mixtape that is actually gospel with his friend Kyrie. And again, I want to know more about Kyrie. I don't know. I don't know if Kyrie is with Ruth. I think I might've missed that. But Ruth really wants to be with Elroy. I don't know. I want to know more about that. I want to know about King's journey and his spirituality. And of course I want to know what's going to go down with Esther. Duh, goes without saying. This was a really great show. And again, I used to love watching YouTube specifically because I would find content I wouldn't be able to find anywhere else. And you can still do that, but like in the form of shows like this, like I love it. I love this. And I hope that one day I can see this on BET and give a 30-minute show. Do you know what I mean? I would love to see it on BET because I think BET would be the right platform for it. Do I think they're progressive enough and will handle this with care enough? I don't know. But I would love to see this on BET. I want a lot more people to see this. Like I know it got, and this year alone, I don't even know when it was released, but it was selected by the New Orleans Film Festival. It was an official selection for the New Orleans Film Festival, the New Fest of New York's LGBTQIA Film Festival, Outfest in Los Angeles, Urban World Film Festival, Bronzelness Film Festival. I don't know what that is, but it's out of Atlanta, and then American Black Film Festival. So it was chosen by these were selections. I don't even know what a selection is. That's how out of it I am, but it has to mean something. People are paying attention to this, and I hope that you will too, because I think it's really great. Is it perfect? No, it's not perfect, but I think it's a story that hasn't been told, and I can't wait to hear more about it. So yeah, go watch King Esther. Again, you can get it on YouTube on Issa Rae's channel. I think it's literally called Issa or Issa Rae on YouTube. Just Google it on YouTube. Search it on YouTube. Or you can go straight to kingesther.com. And I think you can watch the whole thing. Or I don't know. I didn't watch it. But I'm looking at the website right now. And it looks like you can watch something. It'll probably point you where to go watch it too. On kingesther.com. So yeah, listen to King Esther, or listen, watch King Esther, and see if you like it too. And yeah, if you like it, or if you just generally want to talk about it, if you have memories about Katrina, anything you want to share about this episode or any of my previous episodes, just click the show notes. The link in the show notes will take you right to my anchor.fm page, where you can leave me a message. And while you're there, if you want to, you can even leave me a donation. Even 99 cents will be a helpful contribution. But as I always say, if you don't feel like donating any money because that's just not your thing, just share this episode with somebody in your life who you think might enjoy it. Or share any episode that you think someone in your life might enjoy. Again, Kwanzaa's coming up, so feel free to share my Kwanzaa episode from last year, or any of my other episodes where I talked about anything that interested you. Just share it. Thank you again, for listening on Anchor.fm, of course, Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, CastBox, Pocket Cast, Player FM, any place where you listen to this show. Thank you so much for doing that. And why don't you go ahead and join Shame on Google, who left me a wonderful message, a rating and review on Apple Podcast. Why don't you just join them and do the same? Again, you know, all the stars, all of the stars, and a glowing review if you like it. And if you don't, just forget it. You don't even need to leave a review. But when you leave reviews, that's how folks ultimately get to notice the show. And when you're spreading it and more people are listening to it, that also expands the reach of the show too. So thanks again. Yeah. And until next time, bye-bye.